All right, good morning, everyone. Let's begin. So today we're going to start the section of the Shemesh, the sun. So we're going to see a little bit of, it's not as much overlap as much as it is, well, we'll call it a little bit of overlap between our last section of the moon, just in the beginning, and now this part of the Shemesh. So let's take a look at number one. So the Shemesh Omer, what does the sun say? Shemesh Yareach Amad Zvula. So the Shemesh, quote unquote, quotes a pasuk from Habakkuk. The pasuk in Habakkuk is in number two. Shemesh Yareach Amad, the sun and the moon stood in their dwellings. Or I should say, Amad Zvula, they stood in their dwellings. Lo'or chitzecha yahalechu, to the light of your arrows they go. Lenoga berak chanisecha, to the brightness of the lightning of your spear. So it is interesting that here the sun and the moon are reckoned together. If you remember again, actually, from the last shiur, from our last section of the Areach, we had the same general idea. The Areach quoted a pasuk from Tehillim, and ultimately, again, also the sun and the moon were mentioned together. So remember, this goes back already to the beginning of Bereishis, where the sun and the moon are really part of one Bria. So we often focus on the idea that the sun and the moon are differentiated in their purposes later on, but from the beginning, from Maaseh Bereishis and on, they're really reckoned as one creation. So just like the moon quoted, Asa Yareach Lamo'adim, Shemesh Yad, so again, Yareach and Shemesh are quoted in one pasuk. So too, when the Shemesh, when the sun discusses its mission as well, Shemesh Yareach Amud Zvula, both the sun and the moon stood in their dwellings, and again, so on and so forth. So of course, our goal when looking at the Shemesh is to try to analyze its unique and particular message. So if we take a look in the Metzudas David, so to analyze the pasuk in Habakkuk, so it's interesting to note over here is that when the Shemesh speaks, the Shemesh makes reference to Shemesh Yareach Amad Zavula, that the sun and the moon both stood in their dwellings. So the notion of, yes, there are sheets up here. So the notion ultimately, again, of the Shemesh and the Areach, the sun and the moon, standing. So let's take a look. What does this refer to? Right, so that's David in number three. Shemesh Yareach Amad Zvula, Bimei Yehoshua Amad. The Metzudas David understands that this is a reference ultimately, again, to the days of Yehoshua ben Nun. What happened in the days of Yehoshua ben Nun? Kol echad mehem b'medura, v'lo holcha mahalcha, ki Moshe kasov, v'yidom ha-shemesh v'yareach amad. So the Metzudas David understands that the pasuk in Habakkuk is a reference to a particular event which occurred in Sefer Yehoshua. Which event is he referencing? Right? Shemesh beGivon Dom. Right? The battle in Givon, where ultimately, well, take a look at number four, you have it on your sheet. Vayava aleim Yehoshua pit om kala laila, ala min ha-Gilgal, vayihu meim Hashem lifnei Yisrael, vayake maka gidola beGivon, vayirdefeim derech ma'la beischaron, vayakim ad azeka va'ad makeda. So remember again, one of the initial wars of Klal Yisrael against in the city of Givon, or in the area of Givon, and Yehoshua is being successful against the enemies of Klal Yisrael. What happens? Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayhi binusa mipnei Yisrael, heim b'mori beis choron, v'Hashem hishlech aleim avarim gidolos min ha-shamayim ad azeka, v'yamusu rabim ha-shameisu ba'avni abar me'asher hargu b'nei Yisrael b'charev. Az yidaber Yehoshua la-Hashem b'yom, seis ha-Shem es-amori, lifnei b'nei Yisrael, v'yomer aleinei Yisrael, shemesh b'givon dom, v'yareach b'emek ayalon. So remember again, they're fighting against the Amori. This incredible battle is happening in Givon. Yehoshua is concerned that what's about to occur? What is about to occur? The sun is about, they're about to win. But what's the problem? Meaning they're winning. Well, what's the problem? Sun is about to go down. If the sun goes down, remember again, in the wars of yesteryear, battles were waged when? Right, by daytime, right? Remember again, so this is battles waged by daytime. What, nighttime was opportunities for armies to collect their dead and to regroup. What Yehoshua is concerned about is right now, Am Yisrael has the upper hand. The Amori are taking flight. They're being beaten back. if the sun goes down, night falls, that gives the Emori the opportunity to regroup. And if they have the opportunity to regroup, ultimately Klal Yisrael is going to have to start all over again the next day. So Yoshua reaches out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he says, Shemesh be'givon dom, ve'areach be'emek ayalon. Literally translated, sun, stand still in Givon, and the moon in the valley of Ayalon. So Yoshua davens to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, do not allow the sun to set. Allow the sun to remain where it is. Allow the moon to remain where it is. Give us the extra time to be able to vanquish the Amori. And the Pasuk says in Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayidom HaShemesh V'yareach Amad Ad Yikom Goy Oivav Halohi K'suva Sefer HaYashar V'yamod HaShemesh B'chatzi HaShemayim V'lo Atz Lavo K'yom Tamim V'lo Hoya K'yom Ahu Lefanav V'acharav L'shmo HaShem B'kol Ish Ki Hashem Nilcham Yisrael. So there's a number of things that happen here that are quite dramatic. So remember again, the incredible miracle was what? The sun stood in the middle of the sky. The sun did not set. The moon, quote-unquote, did not rise. Everything remained as is. That's part of the miracle. What's the other miracle that the Navi highlights? The other miracle? What did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? HaKadosh Baruch Hu listened to man. Meaning, if you notice over here, Yoshua's tefillah is quite interesting. What's the nature of Yoshua's tefillah? It's not your normal supplication, right? What does a normal supplication look like?
To Hashem, but he just says what he wants to happen.
Exactly. Yoshua makes a declarative statement, right? His tefillah is, Vayomer Leinei Yisrael, Shemesh Begivon Dom. Right, Shemesh Begivon Dom. So, this, and again, the pasuk. If this is back at pasuk Yud Beis, as Yidaber Yoshua LaHashem, Yoshua speaks to God. He almost makes a declarative statement: the sun needs to stay where it is. Do not let the sun set. So, two dramatic miracles occurring over here. Number one, of course, the miracle of the sun not setting; the miracle of the moon remaining in its place. So, prolonged daylight. That's miracle number one. Miracle number two, the fact that Yoshua does not deliver a normative supplicative plea, like we find when people normally daven. They usually beseech HaKadosh Baruch Hu for something. Yoshua is not beseeching, but at the end of the day, he really is declaring. He's making a statement. Obviously, he's davening, but it's davening in the form of a statement. So that's why the Navi says, L'hoya kayomahu lefanav la'acharav, l'shmo HaShem bekol ish, Ki Hashem Nocham Yisrael. Even if you look when Moshe Rabbeinu, right? No one davens, the truth is, in as forceful of a way as Moshe Rabbeinu, where Moshe Rabbeinu makes demands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. No one else davens like that. Aram didn't daven like that. No one davened like that. But Yoshua takes it a step further. Whereas Moshe made demands, at least the demands ultimately, again, were in the form of a dialogue. Yoshua over here, although the Pasuk does say, Az Yidaber Yoshua LaHashem, but even when Yoshua speaks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's in the matter of a statement. So therefore again, just to understand, so therefore the Mitzudas David understands that that's the meaning of the Pasuk in Habakkuk. Shemesh Yareach Amad Zevula, the sun and the moon stood in their dwellings. That particular phrase is a reference to the miraculous military victory in Givon, a military victory that was made possible because the sun and the moon retained their respective positions within the sky. Okay, it's fascinating, but the Shaila, of course, becomes what? Remember, all of Perek Shira is what? Our messages, right? It's the natural world teaching us lessons and messages. So this is incredible. We already learned about this miracle in Sefer Yoshua. But what's the deeper message? What's the deeper miracle? So if you take a look at number five, so it's interesting. So first of all, the lashon of that the Navi uses of Vayidom, right? Vayidom HaShemesh. Where else do we find that word Vayidom? Excellent. Vayidom Aaron. Now Vayidom Aaron means what? He was silent. But on a deeper level, what does it mean? So it means acceptance, right? It means acceptance. But to give you the idea also, what it means is Aaron, Vayidom means silent, he maintained his disposition and composition. Aaron did not waver. I don't mean not waver in his emunah, that's obvious. Aaron ultimately, again, maintained a certain level of consistent behavior. So Vayidom doesn't just mean that he was silent, that he didn't cry, that he didn't object, that he didn't question. It means that there was a certain consistency in the way he comported himself. The same way that he held himself before the deaths of Nadav and Abihu was the same way that he maintained his personal disposition and composition after the tragic death of his sons as well. The lashon of Vayidom Hashemesh means that the sun retained its consistency. The same way that the sun normally shines throughout the day, so Vayidom Hashemesh means the sun did not move. The sun remained in place. The sun did not change. Now the truth is, this sounds a little bit familiar, right? Because remember, what did the moon say? If we go back to our last section, when we spoke about the Yareach. So if you remember again, the Yareach quoted the pasuk from Tehillim. Asa Yareach lema'adim, Shemesh yada mivo'o. Remember again, what is Shemesh? So Shemesh yada mivo'o meant what? The sun was consistent. Remember again, we contrasted, excellent, the moon with the sun. The moon is very, quote-unquote, unpredictable, imprecise, and inconsistent. Right? The moon never looks the same way any two nights in the row. Versus the sun, which really is the paradigmatic example of consistency. Like we spoke about, we tell time by the sun. The sun maintains a level of consistency that the moon does not. So it's interesting over here, when the Navi uses the Lashon to teach us that the sun did not set, it uses the Lashon of Vayidom HaShemesh. The Shemesh remained consistent. Now the truth is, consistency, as we just mentioned before, is the hallmark of the sun. The moon is inconsistent. We spoke about that in our last Shiurim. And the sun, however, is the paradigmatic example of consistency. The sun rises, the sun sets. While it's true that the timing of the rising and the setting may depend on the day, may depend on the time of year, at the end of the day, the sun represents as the paradigmatic example of consistency. And if you take a look at number 5, so remember again, we see this going back to my Sibereshis. Vayomer Elokim, Yehi Ma'oros Birkiya Shamayim Lahabdi Ben Yom Ben Alayla. If you skip a little bit towards Pasuk Yerches, V'lim Shol Bayom U'Balayla U'Lahabdi Ben Ora Ben Achoshech. So remember again, I think we spoke about this when we spoke about the moon. In the original plan, both luminaries were to be consistent. The sun would be consistent luminary by day. The moon would be the consistent luminary by night. Remember again, what happens to the moon? What happens to the moon? What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell the moon? Right? Lech umi eit esatzmeich. Remember again, the moon comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with this whole taina, ein shtei malachim mishtam shem mikesra achos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you're right. Lech umi eit esatzmeich. Make yourself smaller. So the moon becomes the smaller, inconsistent luminary. But that was not the original plan. In the original plan of things, you would have two consistent luminaries. And in fact, if you look at number 6, this is why something is very dramatic. If you remember again, now number 6 is going to the Mabul. So during the flood, what happens? I'll take you now to the aftermath of the flood. Vayarach Hashem esreach hanichoach. HaKadosh Baruch Hu smelled the pleasing aroma. This is a reference to the karbanos that Noach brought when they exit the teva. Vayomer Hashem alibo. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to his heart, Lo osif lekalel odes ha'adama ba'avur ha'adam. I will no longer curse the earth because of man. Ki yetzir leif ha'adam ra minuarav. Ultimately, again, because the yetzir of man is bad from his youth. What does that mean, by the way? Ki yetzir leif ha'adam ra minuarav. What does that mean? That you're born with the Yetzirah, not the Yetzirah Tov. Good, good. What else could it mean? Let me say differently. What doesn't it mean? I'm sorry? We're not bad people. It's a very important idea. So whether it means you're born with the Yetzirah, not the Yetzirah Tov, whether it means that you're born with certain inclinations or proclivities, the idea is that I might be born with negative things, but I'm not born a bad person. This is incredibly important because this puts Judaism in contradistinction with other religions. There are other religions that believe that man is born inherently evil and that it is man's job ultimately to rectify and remedy himself, to somehow shed the evil and absorb good. We do not believe that at all. We believe just the opposite. Man is born good. Man is born good, right? And our natural state of being is tov. It's just that I also happen to be born with some negative baggage. So I spend my life trying to go ahead and amplify the good and shed the negative baggage. So it doesn't say, ki adam ra minu arav, ki yetzer leiv ha adam ra minu arav. I have negative aspects, inclinations, or proclivities that are part of me. And therefore, therefore, here makes the promise, I will not wipe out humanity as I just did with the Mabul. Now here's the important part that I want you to focus on. Od kol yemei ha'aretz zera v'katzir v'kor v'chom v'kaitz v'choref v'yom v'layla lo yishbosu. What's the meaning of that last pasuk? What is Kadosh Baruch Hu saying? What is he saying here? I won't what? I won't change things. In other words, good. So meaning what Echlesh Baruch was saying is apparently during the Mabul, everything was mixed up. Everything was mixed up. And so Echlesh Baruch says, I'm not going to mix up the Seder of the world anymore. Od kol yemei ha'aretz, zera v'katzir. Zera means what? Planting. Katzir means harvesting. Kar v'chom. Kar. Cold, chom, heat, warmth. Kayetz v'choref. Summer and winter. Yom v'layla. Day and night. Lo yishbosu. So amazingly enough, and if you take a look at number 7, so Rashi comments over here, and Rashi says the following. Yom v'layla lo yishbosu. Michlal sheshavsu koyimei ha'mabul. Now the interesting word, what does it mean? What does it mean lo yishbosu? Lo yishbosu means what? Will not rest. Will not rest. Now, will not rest indicates that ultimately, again, all of these things are constantly switching off. It's summer, then it's winter, right? It's planting, then it's harvesting. It's night, and then it's day. So apparently, Rashi says, Michlal sheshavsu koyemei ha'mabul. All of these processes kind of went on sabbatical, right? All of these processes were stopped during the Mabul. The world was created with a Seder. The world was created with an order. This is, let me take a step back. You ever wonder, why does the Torah go into such great detail regarding the story of creation? Does anyone really understand? Do we understand the story of creation? No, we don't understand. First of all, we don't understand the story of creation for one simple reason. Kadosh Baruch Hu created Yeshman as something from nothing. We don't understand what it means to create something from nothing. You know, if you think about it, think about science in just a moment. We could take any something and understand scientifically how to break it down and analyze it to its smallest parts. But at the end of the day, the notion of nothingness, first of all, the human mind can't comprehend, and the notion of creating something from nothing is incomprehensible. We could create something from something. Mankind could do that. We could take something very small and create something very big, or take something very big and reduce it to something very small. But to create something from nothing, and even further than that, how long did it take Kadosh Baruch Hu to create the world? How long? Not a trick question. How long? 6 days. Okay, what's the obvious shayla? Does it mean 6 24-hour days? I ask you. So the truth is, who knows? Time is a human construct. Remember, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Haya Hove V'Yiyeh. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is timeless. It's timeless. So the notion that timeless God created in 7 days, what does that mean? Was each day 24 hours? Was each day 5 billion years? Who knows how long it was? But one thing I know, which is, I don't understand the day in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's existence, kevyachol. I don't understand what that means. So if I don't understand what real creation is, and I know that 7 days, you know, people often get hung up on all of these ideas about that the world is 5,780 years old. What do you do about carbon dating with fossils? That the world is billions of years old. So remember again, none of this stuff is akasha. This is not contradictions. Because to think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu used 7 24-hour days, we're confined by 24-hour days. The Ribbono Shel Olam was not confined by anything. So each of those days could have been 24 hours, could have been billions of years. We don't know. Because at the end of the day, I don't understand, none of us really understand, the Genesis narrative, the story of creation. If that's the case, why is it here? If we don't understand it, why is it here? I'm sorry? to teach us something. Excellent answer. What is it here to teach us? A very simple lesson. What is it here to teach us? The simplest lesson of my Sevarishis is Hashem created the world. So first of all, that's the simplest answer. It's part of one of our fundamental Ikar of Emunah. Kadosh Baruch Hu is the Borei. He's the creator. Good. What else does it teach us? I'm sorry? There's something bigger than us that we don't understand. Excellent. The first lesson of the Torah is to teach us that we don't really understand and know. Good. What else? A simpler, you're thinking too deep, a simpler daily life lesson that you glean from my Sibirishus.
It's okay to work.
I'm sorry?
It's okay to work.
It's okay to work. Excellent. Good. Along those same lines, what else? That in life, you must have a seder. There must be an order to the way you live your life. In life, in this world, there are often two types of people. There are organized people, and there are unorganized people. Unorganized people, no matter how brilliant they may be, often have difficulty getting forward in life. You might have experienced this in school, right? If you're not organized, you could be exceptionally smart. But if you're not organized, it's really hard to move your life forward. You see this in school, but forget about school. Where this dramatically manifests itself is in life, and it's every aspect of life. How organized you are depends on the type of home you create. Unless you think, again, that an organized home versus a disorganized home doesn't really make a difference, it has an incredible impact on children. Children who grow up in a home where there is Seder are dramatically different than children who grow up in a home without Seder. If you have a career, your ability to progress in a career fundamentally rooted in your ability to have Seder. Your ability to create, forge, and build relationships fundamentally rooted in your ability to have order and Seder in your life. There are some people whose lives, it's always chaos. Always chaos. And the truth is, it creates incredible difficulties for that person and for the people around them. The Torah begins with the story of Ma'aseh Bereishis to teach us that the Ribono Shel Olam has Seder. Our entire mandate in life is V'halachta B'dirachav, divine emulation, to emulate the Ribono Shel Olam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has Seder, and therefore it is my aspiration in life to have Seder as well. To have Seder, to have order in everything I do. One step after the next, one day after the next, to be an organized, Masudar person is how you create worlds for yourself. So what was dramatic about the Mabul? So that's why, again, if you look at my Sevarishis, the beauty of the story is, whether I understand it or not, here's what I do know. On day one, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created A. On day two, He created B. On day three, and there was a Seder. Not only was there a Seder, but what? It was a methodical Seder. Right? Where do we see the methodology of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Bria? When does it become like abundantly clear? On the sixth day. Why? Excellent. Because when Adam is created, then we understand, okay, Adam is the crown jewel of creation. So what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did is, He systematically put together a world for Adam. So when I'm reading the Psukim, so I might not necessarily see a Seder. But once Adam is created and I realize the incredible Seder that ran through all 6 days, it's dramatic. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu teaches me, A, to have Seder, B, to have a plan in life, and C, be organized in everything you do. Now you can appreciate something else. What was so traumatic about the Mabul? Obviously, the loss of life was traumatic, right? Humanity, except for Noach and his family, were wiped out. What else was traumatic about the Mabul? Fundamental disruption of Seder. All the Seder, the organization, right? The Seder that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created in the world. Ultimately, again, during my Sebrachus and all the generations up to Noach, it was the Seder He created, and the Seder that was reinforced was fundamentally disrupted. Everything was disrupted. And when Seder is disrupted, what happens? What is that called? The lack of Seder is chaos, right? And where there is chaos, there's an inability for the world to function. That essentially was the Mabul. The Mabul was total and absolute chaos. And that's what happens. That's what the Torah is saying. There was no night, there was no day, there was no winter, there was no summer, there was no planting, there was no harvesting. It was everything and nothing all together. Therefore, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu smells the carbon of Noah, and he makes, see, everyone thinks that the promise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was not to destroy humanity. That is true. That was definitely a cornerstone of the promise. But there's another part of the promise. What's the other part of the promise? Yom ba'layla lo yishbosu. Which means what? Which means what? What does Rashi say? So what does it mean? Before we get to Rashi, what does it mean? I won't bring any more chaos. In other words, that I will make sure that there is a Seder which remains in the world. There's a Seder. Look at Rashi number 7. Yom ba'layla lo yishbosu. Mechlal sheshavsu kol yimos hamabul. Because we see from here that during the days of the Mabul, ultimately again, day and night, we're kind of intertwined, we're intermingled. Elo shimshu hamazalos velo nikar bein yom ubein laila. During the Mabul, there was chaos, no distinction between day, no distinction between night. Lo yishposu, lo yifsiku kol eila milisnai kesidron. So the promise, the post-Mabul promise, was a promise of the Ribon Shel Olam to maintain order in the world. Doesn't mean that they're not going to be difficult things. Doesn't mean there aren't things that I don't understand. There are plenty of things that I don't understand. But Lamaisa, the construct of creation, the construct of the world, will remain the same. That's the promise, the post-promise. So now, if you appreciate this, that the promise that HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes to humanity in the aftermath of the Mabul is that I won't allow chaos to descend upon the earth, that will maintain a sense of consistency and a sense of structure and a sense of Seder. What is the paradigmatic piece of this divine promise? The paradigmatic piece of nature which highlights the divine promise for Seder and order in the world is the sun. The sun. The sun is the aid, right? The sun is the witness to this promise of the Ribono Shel Olam. Because the seasons change, right? The seasons change. The seasons aren't consistent. Nothing in nature is consistent like the sun. So the sun that we begin to see is not just simply a beautiful luminary that marks day, but the sun is the ultimate witness to the pledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the aftermath of the flood to maintain consistency, Seder, order in the world, and to avoid chaos. That is the essence of the sun. Yes? So this was the dramatic nature of the miracle of the Shemesh and Gibeon. Excellent. So now what do you do with Yehoshua? Excellent. So now we just got finished saying, so the sun is the one thing literally you could set your watch by. Right? The sun is literally the most consistent piece in the natural world. The sun, ultimately, again, is what gives witness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's pledge and promise not to bring chaos upon the world, but to maintain Seder. So what happened in Givon? How could it be then that Yehoshua, Kivyachol, could order the sun? Obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed it. To allow the sun to remain in the sky, does that not disrupt the Seder? And does that not erode the promise? Yes?
Isn't there a thing that when the sun, by Yetzias Mitzrayim, is equals it out?
That the sun, what do you mean the sun by Yetzias Mitzrayim?
I don't remember exactly, but interesting.
So that reestablished equilibrium. Right. I don't know, I never heard that before. I'm happy I came. Oh, Hashem, that's right. That's very interesting. Maybe that's the answer. Maybe the equal. Maybe by, you're saying by Choshech that there was extra darkness? By Bara? Okay. And here it regained it. Good. Someone will find me that Maramakam. I would love to see that. But that could be. So if there was an idea that there was a disruption earlier and this equaled it out, excellent. Good. Any other suggestions? How could it be? So again, you hear the Shaila. It's a fundamental Shaila. The sun, yes.
I was going to say, like, if the Seder was made for man, but like really it was for like the Torah. So Yeshua was saying that this is the way to the...
Beautiful. Beautiful, right? This meaning, the Seder doesn't have a meaning unto itself. The Seder has a meaning vis-a-vis man. So if man needs a different kind of seder, then ultimately, again, this is still called the seder. So let me build on that for just a moment. Take a look at number 8. So I'll take you back in Chumash Bereishis a little bit. So the Torah says as follows, just to give you the context, Lot and his family are being saved by stone in the merit of Avraham Avinu and the Malachim. So remember, you know the story, the Malachim came to stone, ultimately tell Lot to gather up his family, and it's time to go. So remember again, the Malachim give Lot and his family very specific instructions. Number 8. Vayihi kotziam osam achutza. It was that when the Malachim are taking Lot and his family outside, vayomer himaleit al nafshecha. He tells ultimately again Lot and the family, run away. Al tabit acharecha. But whatever you do, do not look back. Ultimately, again, whatever you do, don't look back. Run away, because what happens if you look back? If you look back again, the Malachim say the consequences will be dire. We know the story. Number 9. Ultimately, Lot's wife looks back. Lot's wife, her name was? The Medrash says her name was Iris. Iris, so Lot's wife looks back. Vatabet ishto me'achorav, vatehi nitziv melach. She becomes a pillar of salt. A pillar of salt. So there are two kashas, there are two general questions on this story. Number one, what's question number one? Why does she look back? And question number two?
Why salt?
So if you take a look at number 10, so the Medrash relates, Vatabet ishto me'achorav, acher sha'amala hamalach al tabet acharecha. So remember again, it doesn't make sense. Lot and his wife, they know that they're being saved in miraculous fashion. They know they're not being saved in their own merit. They know that ultimately, again, they are being saved as the result of the schus of Avraham Avinu. They know that these people who are here are malachim. If that's the case, do what they say. Why is it that the wife of Lot looks back? So the Medrash relates, Acha shomala amalach al tavit acharecha, haisa nafsha homa al benosea, Hanish Aros Bistone. It's actually a very moving medrash. The medrash relates that ultimately, again, although we know that two of Lot's daughters went with him and his wife from Stone, Lot had married daughters who did not follow their parents. Lot's wife is a mother. She's heartbroken about the fact that she has daughters who remain behind. So she looks back. Why does she look back? It could be she looked back to see maybe the daughters were indeed coming. Maybe one last hope that her daughters were following. That's possible. Or maybe for whatever the reason, she was just looking longingly back for her children. But nevertheless, she defied the instructions of the Malachim, and therefore she turns into a pillar of salt. Why salt? Writes Rashi, you're familiar with this, Rashi number 11. Vatehi nitziv melach, b'melach chata, u'b'melach laksa. The wife of Lot, she went ahead and she sinned with salt, therefore she's punished with salt. Amar Lot, Tini Ma'at Melach La'archim Halalu. She had said, remember, Lot had said to his wife, let's give a little bit of salt to our guests. This is before they realized they were angels. Let's give a little bit of salt to our guests. Amra Lo, Afa Minag Harah Azeh Atabo La'hanig B'makom Azeh. So she gives him Musar. Bad enough that you brought home guests. Bad enough that you brought home guests. Now you want to give them salt as well. So the Targum Yonasan says a little bit differently. He says in number 12, V'istaklus aninse mi basa malacha, limdo mahavi besov beise di'iva, dihi havis min bansun disdomoi. So listen to this. So the Targum Yonasan brings together these two ideas, both the Medrash and Rashi. And the Targum Yonasan says, why does she look back? She looks back to see what was happening, not just about her daughters. The wife of Lot was from a prominent Saramite family. So her entire mishpacha is in stone. It's wonderful that she's being saved with her husband, but she looks back to wonder what is happening with the rest of her mishpacha. The havis bin son distomai. She was of the daughters of stone, a prominent family. Umetul de chatas bemilcha bepersume anyo hahi avida amud melach. And again, because she went ahead with salt, that she would not give salt, either she wouldn't give salt to the poor, or she wouldn't give salt to her guests. Therefore, ultimately, again, she is given salt. She is turned into a pillar of salt. But perhaps there's another approach with this as well. So let's understand something. When she looks back, the other possibility is that at the end of the day, it's not just the pshat that she's looking for her family. But ultimately, again, she really is still tethered to stone. At the end of the day, her life, her identity is rooted in stone. And even though her husband is taking her out of stone, and we spoke about this by Adam Arishon, you could take a person's body wherever, you could lift up a person and transport them. But just because you take their body, don't necessarily take what? Take their soul. Right? Remember again, this is why. Remember by Adam Arishon, Vayikach, Pasuk says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took Adam, put him in Gan Eden. What does it mean? He took him with what? With word. Lakcho b'dvarim. So that it could be what's happening over here is as follows as well, which is that Eishes Lot, she's physically going with her husband, but at the end of the day, she doesn't want to leave stone. Her home is in stone. Her family is in stone. Her children are in stone. Her ideals are in stone. Her hashkafas are in stone. And so when she looks back, what she's really demonstrating is what? She doesn't really want to leave. Her home, her identity, her essence is rooted in stone. And so what does she turn into when she turns back? She turns into salt. What is the primary use for salt? So we often think the primary use of salt is to enhance flavor. But in the ancient world, salt was used for something else. It was a preservative. When you salt something, you preserve its state. It remains as is. Eishes Lot turns into salt. Why? Because it's demonstrative of the fact that she was unwilling to evolve. You see, you would have thought like this. If you're Eishes Lot, the Malachim came. Stone is being destroyed because of its depravity, because of its evil. The Malachim are saying, you're going to be saved. Why? Why are you being saved? Not because of your own righteousness. Why are you being saved? Because of Avraham Avinu. But the Malachim are saying to Lot and his wife, what are they giving Lot and his wife? What are they giving them? Another life, a second chance, right? Go wherever you want, just get out of here and make a new life for yourself. What an incredible gift. There is no greater gift than the gift of a new opportunity, than the gift of a new beginning. And Lot and his wife are being given it, even though they haven't earned it. They don't deserve it. Yet they are being given this gift. And what does the wife of Lot do with this gift? What does she do? What does she do effectively? She turns backwards. And she says, no. I'm from stone. That's who I am. That's what I am. That's how I identify. That's my gestalt. That's my essence. That's my being. And so as they're running away to the new life, to the new opportunity, to the new beginning, she turns back to stone. Because at the end of the day, she's unwilling to evolve. She is unwilling to change. She is unwilling to start over. And how does this unwillingness to evolve, to change, start over manifest itself? She turns into a pillar of salt. Salt preserves you as you are. Salt prevents any type of change or evolution. Salt says, we'll take what you are and preserve it for however long we possibly can. When she turns back to stone, she demonstrates an unwillingness to change, an unwillingness to evolve, an unwillingness to transcend her stone identity and to go ahead and accept the new one. And so because of that, the Mida Kinegan Mida is she's turned into the ultimate preservative. She is frozen for all eternity, preserved for all eternity as she is. What does this have to do with the sun? It's now beginning to appreciate something. The sun, we said, was what? The sun, we said, is the paradigmatic example ultimately of what? Of consistency. Because, and remember, what does the sun teach us? The sun teaches us that we have to be constant and consistent, right? Isn't the hallmark of successful living to have consistency and constancy in everything. In our relationships, to be consistent, in our relationship with one another, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in our goals and our dreams. You want to make things happen? You can't work hard one day and then not work for the next 4 days. It doesn't work that way. You want to make something of yourself in life? You have to work hard each and every day. You have to be constant and consistent. You have to have your hashkafas. You have to have your ideologies. You have to have your beliefs. You have to have your tenets, and they must be constant and consistent. That's the sun. Yet what does the sun tell us in Perek Shira? Shemesh Omer, Shemesh Yareach Amad Zvula. The sun and the moon stood in their place. So remember again, Pasuk from Habakkuk refers to what event? Let's go back, refers to what event? Shemesh Begivon Dom, which represents the one time the sun what? Wasn't consistent. The sun changed. The sun changed, the sun adapted. Or in other words, successful living requires one to be constant and consistent. Yet, you must always have a willingness to change and adapt when it is necessary. You hear this incredible idea? You have to be consistent and constant. But you must also possess the koach to change when it is necessary. That is the greatness and the godliness of the sun. The sun is the most consistent part of nature. The sun is what reminds us day in and day out of the lessons of Maase Bereishis. You have to have a seder, you have to have an order, you have to have constancy and consistency. Yet that very sun teaches us that what? You must also be willing to adapt and to change when life requires it. And isn't this the key to success? I have to be constant and consistent except when I'm not. Right? I have to be constant and consistent except when consistency is not good. Because you know, there are times in life when you have to adapt. There are times in life where you have to take a new mahalach. There are times in life where this was the good road, but for right now I have to take a different road. These were the right hashkafas, but now I have to veer a little bit. For whatever reason, that's different for all of us in different stages in life. But although constancy and consistency are the hallmarks of a successful life, at times we all have to adapt to bend in different ways. And so the message, at least the first message for today, of the Shemesh, of the sun in Perek Shira is, Shemesh tells us, I am the paradigmatic example of constancy and consistency. I represent the very lessons of Maase Bereishis, that there has to be a seder, there has to be an order, and there has to be a consistency to when you live. But sometimes consistency results in rigidity. And rigidity could be dangerous. Because if a person is too rigid, they don't have the ability to adapt. And if you can't adapt, then you won't be able to meet life's various challenges. And therefore, the Shemesh in Perek Shira says, Shemesh Yareach Amad Zavula. The sun says, I am the paradigmatic example of consistency. Except when I had to adapt, except when I had to change. When did I have to change? In Givon, I stood a little higher, right? I should say I shone a little bit longer, because that's what the circumstances required. The life lesson for us being, life requires consistency. Consistency in Seder in almost everything in life to the best of our abilities. But lest you think that consistency in Seder means rigidity, the Shemesh tells us consistency is important. Constancy, I don't think constancy is a real English word, but you understand what I mean. Constancy is important, but at the same time, avoid rigidity. Because so much of successful living requires for us to have the ability to adapt when circumstances require it. Yes? Absolutely, absolutely. Taking opportunities, trying something new, absolutely. And like I said, I think each of us internalized this type of lesson in different ways, right? For some of us, it refers to how we look at life. We've looked at life in a certain way. Sometimes I have to shift that. Sometimes it could be for opportunities, right? I'm scared to take a new opportunity because I've never done it. I have to learn to adapt. So the application of the lesson, of this lesson, I think, is very personal and applies to each of us in different ways. But the yesod is a fundamental life yesod. We must strive to be like the sun, to be constant and consistent. We must live life with a seder, but don't let consistency and seder result in rigidity, because so much of life is learning to adapt and sometimes to remodel and refashion ourselves in the face of different life circumstances. All right, we'll stop over here for today. We're going to continue with the Shemesh from here. Session, one more class on Wednesday.
Adapting and like, no, I know. There's no,
that,
can't ever
that is the, I'm sorry.